This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everything Evolves, the world's only podcast devoted exclusively to Evolve Wrestling. We're your hosts. We're the Wrong Boys. I'm Aaron Bentley. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Like the Car. I'm joined by Aaron Taub. You can find him at AP Taub. I want you all to know that we are, of course, proud members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, which you can find at voicesofwrestling.com or on the podcast app of your choice. I don't think I mentioned it, but our main Twitter account is at Evolve Pod. Make sure you're catching us there. And if you're not subscribing on iTunes or through some other podcast application, you can, of course, now get your fix of the Wrong Boys on Google Play. So make sure to check that out. Okay, we're going to talk today about Evolve 98 and Evolve 99, these shows that came out this weekend. But first, AT, what are you up to?
Not a whole lot. I went to some wrestling shows this weekend. Yeah. Had a great time. We'll talk about it. Today I'm observing the holiday. It's we're recording Monday night on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and just hanging out. I was reading the letter from a Birmingham jail. Have you read this thing?
Yeah, dude. I think I read probably like parts of it a long time ago, but in law school I took this class called the Civil Rights Movement and the Law. It was just about the way that civil rights activists used the law to affect change. And our professor was like really into this letter. And so we all read it at that time and talked about it in depth. And then I read it today.
Yeah, it bangs.
Yeah, dude.
Like, I don't know. I was just like, like it's wild because it's like, I feel like we talk a lot about how good Martin Luther King was. Like we sort of deified him as this like Christian saint who like had only love and absorbed like all of the violence that was thrown in his face, and was always good. But like, we don't talk about like how great he was. Cause like this thing is like, he's a fucking genius, right? Like you read this letter and it's just like in like five paragraphs, he's like, oh yeah. Like, and it's so relevant. Right? Like in five paragraphs concisely with like good as hell writing, he just basically explains like the basis for like the Black Lives Matter protest. And like, just like there's so much in it that just is like totally like you see it throughout the letter. Just there's so much that's relevant today. And I was just like, I don't know. I try to read it every year on Martin Luther King Day. And it's just like, it blows me away every time.
Yeah, and he's like 34 when he writes this letter.
That's so fucked up. I have 6 more years to start the most morally just movement of all time, plan it out, carry it through, and then write like a banger letter from prison.
Well, I have bad news because he's like 29 when the Montgomery bus boycotts start.
Oh, man.
I know. Well, I'm 31, so
yeah, I gotta like really sort of like get the courage up and do something.
yeah, and you're right. It's mad relevant to today, and that's cool in one way, and also like really sad, I guess, because it shows us how little progress we've made on some fronts, or I guess just that like the same struggles pop up throughout history. Like, so at the very beginning, if you haven't read the letter from Birmingham Jail, you should.
Yeah, we'll put a link. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry for this tangent. Bear with us.
Nah, it's cool. It's very cool. So the whole point is like some clergy people have been criticizing Dr. King about the actual like direct action protests that he's involved in, that he's leading. And so he says, hey, I know you have called what I'm doing, quote, unwise and untimely, which is like that's what every demonstrator deals with, right? I mean, we see that all the time today with Black Lives Matter, with anybody trying to do anything that's actually effective. We hear that. But I thought the really cool part of the beginning of this letter is that he talks about that the only reason he's responding to this, like he's like, look, I get a lot of criticism. The only reason I'm responding to this is because I think you are criticizing me in good faith. And it was a good reminder to me as I read it that we don't need to respond to all criticism or all negative things. Like we spend so much time, especially as it relates to politics, arguing with people who aren't coming at us in good faith. And I thought this was a good reminder that we really should just ignore those people and let that roll.
Right. Because you'll like constantly read, like, yeah, every time the president says something racist and everyone's like, oh, yeah, like you're a huge racist. And you have all these people who are like, no. And it's like, oh, you don't care about racism. You don't care. Why are we even, it doesn't matter to you. We know it doesn't matter to you. Why are we like wasting our time?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's also like a savage burn on all his other critics.
Right.
Like you guys only get half a bar.
Right. It's low key, just like a savage burial, which I really like. The other part that really stands out to me is he has this, it's pretty well quoted, but I don't know that people, it's really well quoted in my circles. I'm not sure that like on a mainstream level people point it out, but it's his whole riff about white moderates and how they're like some of the worst people that he's standing up against. Is, or you know, that are keeping the action from being as effective as possible, is the people who you know, want to stand in the middle and they kind of want to pretend that they're allies, but they really aren't doing anything to help, and how really those are the worst possible people. And that's like 100% what we're dealing with today.
Yeah. And it makes me like be like, okay, like I can't do that. I have to like go out and do things. Like I can't just like I can't not like, it's like whenever I read it, I'm like, okay, like I gotta like put the video games away and like get to a meeting or like, I don't know, be productive.
Well,
I
think he's more talking about like Jeff Flake.
Sure. Right. Yeah. There's like a lot of points where he talks about like the clergy and there's like all these empty platitudes. And I keep always thinking about like, you know, Marco Rubio, who tweets like some Bible verse every time. Right. Donald Trump says something fucked up and then doesn't do anything.
Right.
I was like, oh yeah, like it's just the whole thing is like, you know, it's just all, it's all there.
I should have gone harder. I should have said he's talking about Joe Biden.
Sure.
that's where I should have went. yeah. Anyway, so we've done the politics talk on this podcast, I guess. AT is the one who suggested I read the letter today. So I'm much appreciative because it rules.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah. And it's also, it's just, I don't know. I think it's important because it's like, he got so whitewashed and you see all these people who never, like all these people who are like, can't stomach like Barack Obama and, you know, DeRay McKesson are like, oh yeah, you guys should be more like Martin Luther King Jr. You know, he like, you rabble rousers like need to like tone it down. It's like, that's like, I don't know. It's
right.
It's just like, it's, yeah. So I always think about that. And I don't know.
Yeah. It's always this thing of like, oh, Martin Luther King never tried to divide people. And, you know, he wasn't, you're race baiting, not like Martin Luther King. He just wanted to bring people together. And it's like, they only quote that one line from the I Have a Dream speech.
Right.
It's like, dude, Martin Luther King was an absolute radical.
A self-assertive, in the letter he talks about, he's like, it's not whether we're extremists, but like what kind of extremists are we going to be? So I don't know.
That's right.
I know that these are like off-repeated points, like on the left, I guess, but I don't know. I don't know. I imagine there are some people who are listening and they're probably like skipping through this part anyway, but like, you know, who don't hear these arguments all the time.
Right.
And so we were just thinking about it because we're recording on this day and
People
don't really observe this day either, right? They take the day off. They like watch basketball, but they don't really, and the NBA does a really good job, but like, if you do other things, like it, you like kind of forget why you take the day off. So people like to put the Christ back in Christmas. We're putting the Martin Luther King Jr. back in Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yeah, dude. Two white guys bringing it back.
Yeah. Well, we're trying. We're trying. Yeah. We're trying to not be the worst.
I just want to say that like my favorite part, I think I've said that about every part of the letter. My favorite part of the letter is the last part where he's like, sorry, this is so long, but I don't really have much to do because I'm sitting in this
jail cell. And I just have to confirm for everyone that when you get a lot of letters from people in jail and prison, like I do, like they get really long. Like I have dudes who will write me like 10 pages front and back, single space, you know, not even like college ruled paper. And it can be a lot, but you just kind of have to accept and appreciate that. It's like, well, it's cool to talk to people on the outside and be able to get all your thoughts out. So you learn to enjoy it. So anyway, I was trying to make a joke and I ended up feeling like I needed to say something heartfelt. Classic AJB.
Yeah,
all right. We are going to talk about Evolve on this podcast. We promise. One of the big bits of news that came out of the shows this weekend is that WWN announced that they will be bringing to Mania Weekend Munenori Sawa, who was on Evolve 1, some of the early Evolve shows, but hasn't, you know, really been back in this universe since then. And I know that Twitter went nuts. There were a lot of people who were very excited about Munenori Sawa being back in Evolve, particularly Alan Cunahan. So I'm very excited for Alan and Case Lowe and the people who are pumped to see Sawa. I am going to have to admit that I'm a fake geek girl and not that familiar with Sawa. So I look forward to digging back into the Evolve catalog to see some of his stuff before we're in New Orleans.
Same.
Cool. One other thing, I guess maybe we should have talked about this first before we got into Sawa. One other thing, if you're following us on Twitter at EvolvePod,
Wouldn't you be?
Yeah, of course. We posted a poll because AT and I have been talking about the possibility of doing an occasional show where we don't focus exclusively on Evolve, where maybe we talk about some bigger issues that don't touch on Evolve, but touch on the larger wrestling landscape. It wouldn't be like a flagship type show where we talk about wrestling, all sorts of other like wrestling that's going on. We don't have any intention of doing that. We just want to talk about stuff that's happening that affects like the business of wrestling, that affects, and not in a WrestleNomics kind of way, because they're already doing that well. What we want to do, for example, there was this big story about CWF Mid-Atlantic and Brad Stutz, and then Bruce Mitchell wrote a report about it. There's a lot of talk about that. I really can't come on here and talk about that at the length that I would like to, because it has nothing to do with Evolve. And I know, of course, you guys are only tuning in to hear our Evolve takes. So that's the kind of thing we might talk about on a separate show like that. But we really want to gauge whether our listeners would be interested in hearing that.
Yeah, I think that, like, I guess from my thinking, it's like, I don't know, we have like a lot of people who listen to the show because they love Evolve. And then we have a lot of people, we hear from a lot of people that are like, we never watch Evolve, we love the show. And so, I don't know, I feel like it would be good to do a show that sort of blends like my sort of understanding of like media and media criticism and journalism, and Aaron's understanding of the law and his knowledge of history and sort of various class struggles, and sort of try to put together a show that like talks about wrestling, sort of looks at wrestling through those lenses. But I don't know, it's kind of like what we do on this show, but just talking about other stuff. But I don't know, it's just a thing we're thinking about. It depends on like whether people actually want it and also whether we have time. So I don't know, we've just been going back and forth, thought it might be fun.
Yeah, I totally should have let you lead that, because your explanation of what the show might be like was way better than what I said. So I appreciate that. But basically what we want is like, if you're interested in that, let us know.
Yeah.
If you're not interested in it,
also tell us. Yeah, we won't do it if everyone's going to hate it.
Right. I mean, I guess what will eventually happen is we'll post a show, and if nobody listens to it, we won't do it anymore.
We'll do it again. Yeah. Cool. Sounds good.
But anyway. Okay, but we just wanted to put that out there. Let us know at EvolvePod. What you're thinking. The DMs are open. You don't even have to do it publicly if you just want to let us know what you're thinking. All right. Well, let's get to these shows. AT, you were there. You were there Saturday at La Boom and Sunday at St. Finbar's Church in Brooklyn. So I guess what I want to hear, other than Mania last year, I've never gotten to see an Evolve show live. So I just want to hear from your perspective what it's like in these venues, or what it was like this weekend.
Yeah. So I'll tell you about it. So La Boom is in Queens, and so it's pretty close to me. So I took the cab there. It's in kind of like kind of a weird, very like, it's right by a big, not a highway, but like a big main road, like a big artery through Queens called Northern Boulevard. And it's like, there's like a lot of car dealerships around that paints the picture. And La Boom is cool. It's like this bar and nightclub. You've seen it. You know what it's like. This show was interesting because it's like, usually I find that the crowd at La Boom is really hot all the time. Like they know all the wrestlers. They're there for them. They chant. They're like, they respond to everyone. And this show was weird. It was a little bit of a smaller crowd than I think I've seen there in the past. And certainly down from what they were doing during, you know, the Cruiserweight Classic period when they had Sami Zayn doing autograph signings before the show. And so, yeah, the crowd was a little down. They were kind of like quiet at times. Like they popped big. They were really into like the big indie stars. Like they were into Walter and Keith Lee and Matt Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. But it was like Jaka came out and got nothing, which was crazy because it was like, I don't know, this dude's coming off some great matches and some of them in this building. And then, you know, Darby Allin came out and he got some reception, but not much. It was just really strange. But then the other thing is I think that they just mic the building really well, because I don't know, what did you think of how it sounded watching on the live stream, on the VOD? Because from my perspective, it was like, oh, this sounds great. If I hadn't been at the show, I would have thought this was like a great, really lively crowd.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch Evolve 98 live, but I did see your tweets later saying like, the show was kind of brought down by the crowd, I thought. And I was like, huh. And then I watched the show on VOD and I was like, I don't know. The crowd kind of sounded like they ruled to me. Like it seemed pretty hot. So you must be right that they mic'd it really well.
Yeah. Or like, I had like a hallucinatory experience. I don't know. It was weird. It was sure. Kind of a mind fuck. Cause I was at the show and I was like, man, these guys are like not really giving people much, on their entrances. And then like, I went back and watched, I was like, oh no, it's loud. So I don't know. That was my take that night. The second night was at the ass end of Brooklyn, but, that was cool. That neighborhood's like fascinating because you see like the full tapestry of New York City and its dynamism. Like you walk one block and it's like Christopher Colombo Boulevard for all the Italians who came throughout, you know, the 20th century. And then the next block is New Utrecht Avenue for the Dutch settlers. And then you see the neighborhood in the present day and it's like a huge like Asian and Chinese community with like a bunch of storefronts written in Mandarin. And that show didn't sound as good necessarily on the VOD, but live, it sounded like the crowd was great. Like they popped for everyone who came out. They were like, they recognized everybody. They were into it. I went there for Style Battle too. And both Style Battle and Evolve had a couple people in the front row who were just kind of like, it's like sometimes you go to a wrestling show and some people feel like it's like open mic night, you know? And, it's like, look, if you're thinking about starting a chant or doing a joke, I'm not hard to find. Just kind of run it by me first. I can give you some good editorial feedback. You know, if you come to me and you're like, hey, I'm thinking about doing, you know, the good burger, I'm a dude, he's a dude, we're all dudes thing. but instead we're all bros. Like just, I can be like, all right, well, I like where you're headed, but I think you need to workshop this a little bit more and try to bring it back next month, you know, before you do it.
That's a really good take, AT. What I'm wondering, though, is what about people coming to you for fashion advice?
Oh!
maybe it's not you. Like, who in the building should people come to about their fashion accessories, mainly?
I don't know what you're talking about.
If you watched Evolve 99 or if you bought the video on demand, I encourage everyone to fast forward it right to the part where Keith Lee's giving a promo after the show. You will see about three quarters of AT's head with the other quarter being all scarf, a very large scarf. And so one of our Twitter followers had some real fun with approximating what AT looked like in this scarf. Did anybody there say anything to you about the scarf, AT?
No, because the other people at this event were New Yorkers. They understand winter. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here getting chastised by two people who, when like there's like a frosting of snow, they scrape it up from the car windshields to try to make snowballs. You know what I mean? You and Tim from Arkansas, it's like, it's just like unbelievable. I can't, you know, you don't even know the first fucking thing about bundling. Do you even own a pair of long underwear?
Of course I do.
I mean, so it's just like, I just don't understand. Like, I'm getting all this shit from people who really don't even know what it's like. So the scarf, it's a lovely Islander scarf. It's blue and orange. I'm supporting the squad. Huge win over the Rangers on Saturday, by the way. And, and it's keeping me warm. And that's what's really important. So, you know, if people are hating, you must be doing something right. That's what I always say.
Yeah, sure. First they laugh at you, you know, whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
Then you win.
Then they buy the same scarf that you have.
Is what you were really trying to say was that you were in Brooklyn and the crowd was like full of hipsters, so they were into what you were doing, or?
No, I'm just saying that people, you know, they want to stay warm and they appreciate other people who dress appropriately for the weather. So anyway, yeah, had a great time. I met a couple of our listeners over this weekend. I'm very like, I have a lot of anxiety now that going to these shows after like our kerfuffle with the company. Cause I'm like super anxious that someone's, you know, but going in, I was like, you know, I hope I don't get beat up and I hope the shows are good. And both of those things were true. The shows were good. I didn't get beat up.
Okay. Nobody beat you up, but were you approached by anyone related to Evolve?
No. And I don't know, like I was definitely there. And I imagine some people may have known it was me, but no one from the company said anything. But I did after Saturday night, I was like getting into a cab and the cab driver did a thing where he like booked an Uber ride and a Lyft ride at the same time. And so I was just in the cab and then a dude who came up and was also supposed to have the cab. And it was like there, I was talking to the driver and I made like kind of a face. I was like, oh dude, like, I'm sorry. Like I didn't plan this. Like, and then he was like, hey, I recognize you from, I listen to your podcast. And I just lost my shit. I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Thanks for listening to our dumb podcast. You know, I mean, like he didn't even say it was good. He just said that he listened. Sure. And I was like, oh, it's amazing. Like, you're going to Long Island City. I'm going to a store. You should get in. We can, you know, take the cab there. They can drop you off first. And he was like, nah, it's cool, man. So that guy made my night. And then for the Brooklyn show, I got a DM, like a tweet Saturday night from this dude. He's like, hey, like, you know, what's up? Can you follow me back really quick? I want to DM you. So I follow him back and he's like, hey, like I am a fan of the podcast. I'm not trying to watch porn with you. I'm going to the show with a couple of my friends. They're all straight edge. I rolled a couple joints. You know, do you want to meet me before the show and smoke or whatever? And I was like, I'd love that. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for reaching out. I met this dude, Adam. He was awesome. I hung out with him and some of his friends during Style Battle, and then his friends and me and my friend went to get Chinese food between the shows. And he was super chill. And it was funny because like when I first ran into him, when I first like met him, he was like, yeah, I feel like podcasters are the new rock stars. And I thought it was like an absurd thing to say. Cause like, I mean, maybe like successful podcast, maybe like Marc Maron is like a rock star or even a Joe Lanza, even like someone who's like making money from their podcast. Right. You know, I just thought that was ridiculous.
Well, there are definitely podcasts that are doing like a million downloads.
Right.
And nobody's selling a million records anymore.
Yeah. But not ours, you know? And,
I mean, so, yeah. Don't tell people all our numbers, please.
Yeah. So this dude was chill. His name's Adam. And he was like telling me, he's like, yeah, I make music. You know, it's like, it's pretty chill. And then like I got home and it turns out that this guy is like actually kind of a real rock star. Like his music is like, he makes music under the name, Wicca Phase Springs Eternal. and he makes like it's like he sings like emo over like rap and trap beats, and like it's pretty good. Like I'm into like it's pretty spacey, and like I'm definitely gonna like smoke a joint to it at some point, or like do my content marketing writing. Like it's pretty chill. And he's a member of something called the Goth Boy Click, and he's like kind of famous, I found out. So it's kind of funny that he was like, I feel like podcasts are the new rock stars, but that this person's like actually legitimate. Right. Like you can go on YouTube and look this dude up, and there's video of him and like, you know, on this huge stage, like doing his music, and you know, everyone singing along knows all the words, like in like, yeah, you know, 100 people in a club.
Do you think if we did a show in a club, like a live podcast, that we could get that many people into it?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I checked out a couple of his songs after you told me this story. Yeah. And my point of reference when you were telling me this story was that another member of Goth Boy Click was Lil Peep. Who?
Yes, right. See, I had never heard about any of this. Like, I didn't know anything about like the Goth Boy Click or like the emo rap movement. Like, it was totally new to me, and like it was just this dude who like I hung out with his show, and then I like went home and like went online. I'm like, oh, this is like my friend Drew was a music writer, and I was like, Drew, have you like heard this dude? He's like, oh my god, like I'm obsessed with this guy. Like his he was in this old emo band like Tiger Jaw, and they're amazing. And it was just, I don't know, it was just like kind of a mind blowing experience.
Before Case Low comes for you, it's Tiger's Jaw.
Tiger's Jaw. Sorry.
Yeah. So you told me the story. I was like, Goth Boy Click, Lil Peep. And I was like, all right, I checked out some Lil Peep before, and there were parts of it that were cool, but it like the whole package just wasn't for me, like not my thing.
Sure.
And so I checked out this dude, much more my vibe than Lil Peep, because it's a lot more emo. Like,
yeah.
In like the non pejorative way of using that term. Than Lil Peep. So, yeah, I would have been into Tiger's Jaw when I was really into that kind of music. And so I could see myself, like, I like to listen to really spacey stuff when I'm writing at work. Mm-hmm. I could see me turning this stuff on and writing to it for sure.
Yeah. And the Adam Rules, like, he was, like, he knew, like, he and all his friends were, like, really deep in the bubble, too. Like, or where I was, like, knew, like, I was telling them about my intro to my Pierro for Dummies DVD I was watching, and they were like, this is like little baby shit to us. Like, they didn't say that, but it was definitely like you could tell, like, they'd watched a lot of stuff and were really like, had seen like everything I had seen. They were like, oh, like that match. They were just like, yeah.
They're like telling you the spots.
Yeah. It was sick. So, So that was just like a funny and amazing thing that happened because of this podcast. This is like dumb podcast, and it was cool. And you know, I feel like I don't want to jump the gun because we just met, but I do feel like we're kind of Goth Boy Click affiliated.
Oh yeah.
You know, not like, you know, it's like Nick Gage is like MDK. Right. You know, that's his gang, we got our gang,
GBC.
And definitely check out Wiccaphase Springs Eternal and Martin Luther King Jr.'s Letter from a Birmingham Jail. Those are our two recommendations for the week.
We're really covering the gamut here.
Yeah.
On Everything Evolves.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Do you want to talk about the wrestling now?
I guess. I mean, I'm kind of feeling
this. I feel like we kind of hit all the highs. I mean, that's just a joke, though, because there were some... This wrestling owned. I'm really, really, really excited to talk about it. Do you want to talk about the main event of the first night first and then go backwards? Or is that like...
Yeah, first I wanted to say about Evolve 98.
Yeah, we can just talk general thoughts, I guess.
I feel like people disagree with me on this, but I thought this show wrestling-wise, like, destroyed the second night. Like, I really loved this show. I had a lot of matches rated extremely highly, and I don't know. This was a great wrestling show.
Yeah. I think that you're right. I think I had more fun at the Brooklyn show because it felt like the crowd was better and it was like a better time. But I really, the wrestling was more consistent. And even its peak was higher, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah. It depends on what you fuck with. It depends on what you want. For me,
right.
Zack Sabre Jr. versus Darby Allin was a better match than Zack Sabre Jr. versus Walter.
Right. I mean, those are definitely the two high points of the weekend, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I think you agree with that. So, yeah, it just depends on which one kind of hits you better. I think I would agree with that. Let's talk about Zach and Darby. This was the main event of Evolve 98 for the Evolve Championship. And, of course, if you haven't been paying attention, this is a long-term story of Darby going from the guy who jumps off of things to wanting to be considered a legit wrestler and a legit contender. So after winning the three-way that let him have the opportunity for any match that he wanted, he immediately decided to challenge Zack Sabre Jr., and this is the match that we got. So in the end, Zack defeats Darby Allin via ref stoppage as Zack is putting the submission works to Darby. So I think what I'm hearing from you is that this was your favorite match of the weekend.
Yeah, this was, I think, the best, like, full piece. As, like, on aggregate, this was the best full piece of pro wrestling art that Evolve has produced, like, since I've been following it in the Grapplefuck era. Because I just thought this was excellent. I think that...
And you're, like, talking about going all the way back to the beginning of this story?
Right. This match was the culmination of an eight-month story where, like, 8 months ago, they made a bet on Darby Allin. And this was a dude who was young in the business, who his whole deal was he just jumped off of shit and would kill himself for fan approval. And he just, like, 8 months ago when Darby Allin came out and challenged, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. after the Ethan Page match, after he'd been injured, I did not want to see this. I thought that it was way too soon. I did not think that Darby Allin, could have a great match with Zack Sabre Jr., but they made this bet and they stuck it out and they stuck with Darby. And he just has grown so much in the last 8 months. As far as his character and this extremely driven, kind of off his rocker underdog, just living out of his car to train and making the grilled chicken on the George Foreman grill in the gym bathroom. And he's grown as his character. He's grown as a wrestler. I mean, he's much smoother. His grappling is better. He doesn't have to do all the crazy shit to get over. He's really good. And so they bet on him. They stick it out. And there were times where, like, the match against Thatcher in August was like, I don't know, you know, where you're like, is this going to work out? And they put him in this big spot. And he just absolutely, positively knocks it out of the fucking park. This was an extraordinary performance from Darby Allin. His selling was incredible. I mean, the visual of the runny face paint and his face in agony as Zack Sabre Jr. is just toying with him. These very disrespectful kicks to the head. And he just sold well, and he kept up with Zach in the ring. I mean, the story of this match was that, like, Zach was a step ahead in their grappling and would win most of those exchanges, but Darby hung with, you know, like he would almost catch him in a guillotine and he would stay with him. And he was so quick. He was so quick and fluid. Like, the art matched the life, right? He really became this very, like, at the beginning, it was just, like, kind of chaos, and it was, like, the wrestling was the stuff he had to do to get him between the crazy spots he was doing, but here it was just everything was seamless and fluid, and this match was just great when he countered out of Zach's European clutch and went for the Last Supper pinfall combination, a move that they've built over these past 8 months, right? They built this finisher as a thing that when you see it, you're like, oh shit, this is the end. And I bit. I thought he was going to win. And Zach kicked out at 2.5. And this was just from start to finish. This was an excellent story. It was it was just a great piece of pro wrestling, and also, I mean, there is not enough that can be said about Zack Sabre Jr. He's so good at putting these matches together. He's such an asshole. I mean, when he's stomping Darby's leg and he's just, I mean, there's a moment where he hits a PK and he goes to cover Darby, and the look on his face is just this perfect look of like, okay, motherfucker, it's done now, you know? And then Darby kicks out and you're so satisfied to see him. And I just, you know, this New York crowd that loves him so much was chanting, you know, you're a dick, because of just, I mean, you hear so much, like, I feel like he's almost underappreciated at this point. You hear so much shit about he's skinny and it doesn't look realistic and he's not a technical wrestler. He's just a guy who does technical moves. And it's like, who gives a shit? Watch the matches. Watch this story. This guy just takes everybody to the next level. I mean, we'll talk about it more when we get into sort of like the next night against Walter and sort of his common opponents. But like this match with Darby was incredible. And the matches against Jocko were amazing. And against Leo Rush and Ethan, like all these guys just have, you know, their best matches with Zack Sabre Jr. He's just, I mean, he's great. And I know that we're biased because we love his politics, but I mean, this is just, if this run were happening in the WWE or Ring of Honor, I mean, maybe not New Japan because there's just so many dudes having runs like this there, but in any other company in this country, if someone were having this run, we'd be hearing all about it constantly because we are watching, and we'll talk more about this Walter match too. Maybe I'm blowing my load by talking about this now, but like, it's a hell of a fucking run for Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I think the people who are getting off these takes about Zach and his storytelling or his psychology in the ring, I don't think they've watched him in 2 or 3 years. Like, there was a time when Zach was kind of doing cool moves, but he's grown so much and progressed so far, and I think he's legitimately one of the very best in the world at this point from a storytelling in-ring standpoint. I mean, in this match, I mean, tell me it doesn't look real or doesn't look like he could hurt somebody. I mean, it looked like he could kill Darby, absolutely murder him. I mean, what I love is that Zach's way of showing that he's cocky or that he knows that this guy isn't on his level is to try to kill him. He doesn't like, I'm just going to go through the motions because, you know, I can easily beat this guy. He's like, you know what? You don't deserve to be here, and I'm going to punish you for this. That's how the match starts. I'm just going to punish you for even thinking you can get in the ring with me. Now, eventually, that becomes him becoming a little too cocky in that other perspective of like, you know, I can finish this guy. Like when he tries to pin him by standing on him, you know, like, and that allows Darby to get back in the match. Because Zach switched over from just straight up killing him to playing with him. And that allowed Darby to come back. Now, like you were saying, Aaron, the story was that Darby could survive. You know, Zach has already set up this story that you have to show that you can hang with him in the ring to show that you can be a star in this company. And that's what Darby did. He showed that he could survive. But ultimately, he didn't have enough to win. He didn't have enough to beat Zach, which is perfect, right? It's like, I don't know. Evolve doesn't do enough of these super long-term stories. It's like the reason I love New Japan is because we have these stories that pay out over like 2 years and you can really get invested in it. But this was that. And it is going to go forward. Like, hopefully, one day, Darby will beat Zach and pay it all off. And it will be like, I hope it's in the best possible crowd, you know, under the best possible circumstances, and the people can just go nuts. Because what we saw at the end of this match was that Darby earned Zach's respect. You know, he finally looked at Darby like, okay, you belong here. You are part of the future of this company. I mean, I just don't know how you couldn't fall in love with everything that you saw, especially in the confines of this match.
Yeah. And the other thing too is like, there are different kinds of cockiness. And I think Zach's cockiness like elevates the other guy in the match in a way that like, or it makes you care about them in a way that like, it's not like he's just too cool for school. It's like, he's just those kicks, those like halfway kicks that are just so, they look nasty and they're just so disrespectful, you know, or getting on his knees to slap Darby or having him in a submission is just bashing his knee into the ground. This was great. This was a great match. And I don't know. It's like,
I want to like go watch this again right now. I'm like so pumped just talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, and Lenny Leonard was great in the build up, sort of telling the story at the beginning of the match and being like, you know, who would have ever thought a year ago, if you would have told me that a year ago that Darby would be in this title match, I would have told you were crazy. He was just this kid from a seminar. This was art. This is fucking art. And I tweeted it and I'll say it again. We live in the dumbest time period imaginable, the stupidest period in all human history. But it is a blessing for me to be able to watch so much of Zack Sabre Jr. and John Tavares in their primes and just to like get to witness greatness. So, yeah, this was awesome. Zach came out at the beginning of the match to a new theme music, which it seems he's already abandoned, about, you know, the best way to scare a Tory is to read and get rich. He's a complete package, folks.
There's like five people typing in John Tavares to cage match right now.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So after this match ended, Austin Theory comes out and attacks Zack Sabre Jr. by hitting the Ataxia, his newer finisher. There's some Jason Kincaid involvement where Kincaid comes out, and this is supposed to be the moment where he snaps and he attacks Theory. What I'm more interested in from this segment is that we really have these two things that are coming at each other, which are, who's going to beat Zach? Is Austin Theory the guy to take the title from Zach, or are they ultimately going to pay off this Darby Allin story? What do you think, AT, as far as where we're going on with these two trains on a collision course?
Man, I don't know. And I think either of them are great choices, right? Or like the best choice I feel like is Darby beats him and then loses it almost immediately to Theory, and then Darby chases Theory.
Yeah.
Because I think those two guys are like the future of this company.
What rules is that? Yes. What rules is that they have these two guys in this kind of triangle with Zach, and it's one of the most exciting stories going on in wrestling, to be honest. If you're not watching this, you're really missing out. This is one of the things I'm most excited about in wrestling, period.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. This post-match angle, though, was like... for as good as this was a questionable, you can't even, I can't be mad because you're just like, this was great. This was such, they like nailed it. They hit this out of the park, but the post-match angle, like I have no idea why you wouldn't just leave Darby out, have Zach get attacked another time, do the Kincaid Theory stuff any other time, let Darby just soak in the affection of the crowd, you know, have Zach roll out of there and let Darby just kind of stand up and get to his feet and get the applause. But they didn't do it. Nobody cared about Jason Kincaid coming out and attacking Austin Theory. You could have heard
that was obvious on the,
everyone was like, I guess this is happening. I'm getting up to leave. I'm putting on my huge scarf. You know, I'm ready to go. Like, yeah, that was just, I mean, that was like the payoff to a long angle that just like has not worked, I guess. Like, cause that was supposed to be a big thing, right? Kincaid finally snaps and attacks Austin Theory. And, you know, hits him with his double stomps. And this is like the conclusion of this long story of like, will he or will he not lose his cool? And at times I was like into this story, but now it's like, I wish they would have just kind of wrapped it up already. Cause I'm ready for Theory and Darby and Theory and Zach and Theory and Fred Yehi. Like, he's like the Austin Theory rival who I'm like fourth most into right now.
Yeah, I could not care less about Jason Kincaid. I mean, I've been on this train for a while on this show, but I really don't care about him. You could tell the crowd didn't care, and I just want him to go away. So,
yeah, or find something different, find a different, I don't know. I feel bad because it's like, I don't want to just like shit on this dude. But yeah, I just like, it's, this isn't working. And the sooner that they figure out a different way to go with him, if there is a way to go with him, the better, I think.
I mean, he's been in this company for what, like a year now? And I don't think he's ever been over with this crowd.
A little bit. I mean, there are times where he's like kind of over, or people are like into the thing. And then the next night, like people were really into booing Theory, and they were like kind of into Kincaid. But I just like, it's just not, I mean, I'm sure they know too, right? That he's not where they need him to be if they want him to. He's not over to this push right now.
No, and he's stalled out in his progression as a wrestler. Like, I don't think he's gotten any better as a wrestler since he's been in Evolve.
No.
And you can't say that for any of these other guys. I mean, I think Theory came in after him.
Yeah.
Darby yeah. around the same time or before him. But they have gotten both so much better as wrestlers.
Yeah.
And
they're
it's hard
legit, to, like, top-tier indie wrestlers.
Right. And it's hard to stick around in this company if you're not at a certain working level. And he's got to be one of the lowest level regulars.
Yeah.
For Evolve. I mean, and, you know, it doesn't mean he's a bad wrestler, and it certainly doesn't mean he's a bad dude. It just means that he's not on the same level as most of the other guys in this company.
Yeah.
And so I guess he does have this one interesting story going on. At least I find some interesting.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's
which nice. Is
nice transition back to the beginning of the show,
which is how, they're dealing with these prelims now, right? So the show starts with a four-way freestyle. Brody King versus Snoop Strikes versus Jared 120 versus Jason Kincaid. And the story here is that if Jason Kincaid loses, he's got to go back to the prelims. And whoever wins is going to be is not going to be in the four-way the next night, right? So I kind of like that, like this idea of relegation and how the hierarchy is going to play out. And unfortunately for Kincaid, it makes sense that he's kind of fighting for his spot in the company. So that makes him interesting for a second.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing too. It's like, he's not like, I'm kind of into him feuding with Jarek on the undercards. Like, that's, I'm cool with that. I just think it's time for Austin Theory to be on to big. He doesn't belong with in there with Austin Theory.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And this story is interesting. In these four-way matches, his spots sort of play better in kind of like a wild and wacky four-way or something that's going to be kind of a shorter match. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm into I wasn't familiar with Brody King or Snoop Strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Snoop Strikes is apparently the ACW light heavyweight champion. He was trained by Jay Lethal. I thought he was very cool. He did some really nice stuff. Brody King, I didn't know anything about. I'm calling him Chubby Tommy End. You can take that or leave it, up to you. But he did remind me a lot of Tommy End, at least in look.
Sure. He has a lot of tats.
Yeah. Saying. Well, yeah, but he had a similar, he even had a similar body style, just a little bigger than Tommy End.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's in a band.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
That's what the dudes that. From the music scene that I was sitting with at Style Battle were telling me. One of them, the guy who directs the music videos for Wicked Face Springs Eternal, was like, oh, like I shot one of Brody King's band's concerts.
All right.
Yeah. So
getting all the scoops.
I know, man.
So I thought this was
all right.
What's that?
Brody King.
Yeah. I was into him.
Yeah.
I was into him. This match was fine.
Yeah.
I had to downgrade it a little because I hate like the spots that people do in every four-way. And so I was just like, ugh. Like, just do your stuff and get it in and get out. But the finish was really cool. Like, Snoop Strikes is going for... It was either a Code Red or a Canadian Destroyer. I get them mixed up. But then, so he goes for the pin out of the move, but Kincaid hits the double stomp off the top rope and pins him to win, which I thought was a cool finish.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was a neat finish, and like Kincaid sold the win well. He was like, "Yeah, like you could tell it was a big win." He got his, he won the match with Jarek in it, so he like gets the one up on his rival.
Right.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, that was cool. Jarek goes to hit Kincaid after the match, but Kincaid does the bowing prayer thing, and Jared stops. Shouldn't he have had some sort of like magic trick to make him drop his hands, or? Or maybe he could have kissed Kincaid.
Could have kissed Kincaid. Could have done a little Kino, a little cocky and funny. Just kind of get Kincaid into a place where he's willing to do things that he otherwise wouldn't be willing to do.
Right.
Which is cool and what you should do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think Jared should really, on his vision board, he should put like, kiss Jason Kincaid. Like that should be on his list.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm totally here for it. Okay, so after that, Chris Dickinson comes out, and he's pissed. Oh, he's cleanly shaven, and he's pissed. I'm not sure how the two of those go together, but they did on this night. And he says he wants the end. Of course, you know, this comes back from last month and the issues that he was having with the end. Jaka and Stokely Hathaway come out. Stokely gets on the mic and, you know, tells Chris to chill out a little bit. There are bigger things to worry about. Because Jaka, of course, later on in the show, has a non-title match with Keith Lee. Stokely says, Jaka, for this night only, I'm going to let you use my personal dressing room. And Living Single is going to be on the big screen. I got to say, I enjoyed how much the crowd was into Living Single.
Yeah, they pop big for it.
They really did.
I know nothing about it. I've never seen it.
Have you ever seen Friends?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Friends, but better. And before Friends.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Anyway, it rules.
Friends kind of sucks, though.
Okay, but imagine if it were cool.
All right. I'm imagining it. Sorry, we've had enough tangents. We can get back to the...
Yeah. So Stokely also says that he's excited because RingConf will soon be under the Stokely Hathaway franchise. Did you think that the Dirty Daddy gave Stokely a skeptical look when Stokely said that?
I didn't catch it.
You were there live, so it would have been harder for you to see.
Yeah. I watched it back on tape, but I didn't quite. I'm trying to remember, but I don't think I put it in my notes.
I wonder if, you know, read too much into things sometimes, but I wonder if there is some simmering tension with Stokely chasing after Tim Thatcher and RingConf, and maybe that he's ignoring the Catchpoint Boys a little.
Buddy,
I just wonder.
Buddy, there's always simmering tension.
Catchpoint. That's true. I'm sorry.
But we need to know whether it's a positive piece or a negative piece, whether it's, you know, the tension that brings about the positive piece, or whether it's a negative piece that's just, you know, they're covering over the tension, you know, negative piece, it's the absence of tension.
Well, they have a new t-shirt, so
yeah.
I'm not sure how that plays in. RingConf comes out. Stokely gives Walter an envelope that apparently has a contract in it. And, you know, Walter does the should I sign or shouldn't I sign type thing. Walter, of course, tears up the envelope, throws it at the Dirty Daddy, and, you know, makes the motion that he's coming after Dickinson's tag titles. Dominic Guarini and Tracy Williams kind of hold Dickinson back. You got a feel for Stokely. You know, he loves Tim Thatcher, and Thatcher just, he's moved on to bigger and better things.
Yeah.
Literally bigger things.
It's true. I do feel for Stokely.
Yeah.
Pray
for Stokely. Sad.
Pray for Stokely.
Yeah.
Prayer hand emoji.
Then we get Thatcher and Walter versus Tracy Williams and Dominic Guarini. Ultimately, Walter pins Tracy Williams after an assisted powerbomb. Okay. Is this the match I said was going to suck?
Yeah. You said both Thatcher matches were going to suck, and you were wrong on this one.
I was super wrong. Hashtag wrong boys, wrong boy click. This ruled. I went a strong 4 stars on this match. Like, what I really loved was Walter's kind of house on fire offense. That's not really what we've seen out of Walter in Evolve thus far. He's kind of had some of these like slower, more brutal matches, but this was just, whenever he was in the ring, it was 100 miles an hour, and it was great. Thatcher tried to screw it up a little bit when he that last tag that he took, where he was like, oh, I'm going to do these like shitty European uppercuts, and nobody cared. And I thought the crowd kind of died out a little. Well, LaBoom hates Thatcher, so I'm correct about that. But Walter got back involved, finished it off, and this was great.
Yeah. I mean, Walter's – what a hot tag Walter is. But yeah, I thought everyone was good. I thought that the Guarini Thatcher grappling stuff that started the match was really good. It was like, oh, this is – it's good because it's like a dude who can grapple with Thatcher, and then it's a tag match, so eventually like it has to stop. And so like that was cool and good. I thought that Tracy Williams – this is one of the better Tracy Williams performances in recent memory. I thought like when he got tagged in the match, he was hyped up and he's laying in the stomps and doing his like springboard stomp thing where he pushes up on the ropes. He did a 619, which was cool. Yeah, I thought Tracy was really good here, and he worked really – I think Thatcher and Tracy Williams sometimes I feel like work a little slow. Our friend Oaken on Twitter was talking about how it's like it forces these – the tag match forces these dudes to work a little faster, and I think he's right, and they definitely came with a sort of a greater sense of urgency in this match. So, yeah, this was a ton of fun. I thought I loved the spot of, you know, Walter picking up Greeny and dumping him on Tracy to break up the submission. Yeah, this was a fun, exciting match. And I also thought that like Tracy Williams did a nice job of like, I don't know how hard it is to sell these things. Like, I don't know if you actually just like when Walter hits you, it's like you're being shot out of a cannon, but he certainly like acted like he was getting shot out of a cannon every time he got chopped across the chest. So I thought he looked good in doing that. So yeah, I thought this was a great match. And yeah, I would love to see both. I'd love to see Ring Comp back and continue to be a tag team. And I would love to see Tracy Williams and Dominic Guarini continue to tag up. I think that these two teams would be very good for this tag division.
Yeah, we know, you know, Walter's going to be there in April, so presumably he's going to be with Evolve at least until then. No idea after that, but it was pretty clear here that Thatcher and Walter are going to challenge Dickinson and Jaka for the tag titles at some point, and that sounds awesome. Like, I can't believe how excited I am for that match.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah. I agree with everything you said about Tracy. I'm still kind of meh on Guarini. Nothing he did here really excited me. I'm going to seek out this week some Dominic Guarini match recommendations. And
yeah, some of his AIW stuff and see what's up.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get some people to give me some good recs and see if I can get into Dominic Guarini.
Yeah. The friend that I went to the show Saturday night with, my friend Jeremy, he was saying that Dominic Guarini looks kind of like, you know, like a meatier Dave Meltzer. So,
all right. That's certainly a take.
Think about it. Look up the photos and, I think it's there.
Okay. I'll have to look into that while I'm looking for match recommendations. I'll also be comparing photos of the two of them.
Sounds good.
After the match, the end came out and attacked Catch Point. I wasn't sure where we were going at first because, Dickinson kind of got
there's breaking news really
oh,
quick.
Oh, go ahead.
Evolve has announced a match for WrestleMania weekend.
Okay.
It'll be Munenori Sawa and Daisuke Sekimoto versus Walter and Timothy Thatcher. That'll be at Evolve April. That'll be the Thursday show, April 5th at 8 p.m.
Oh, shit.
So.
Did you say that's the Thursday show?
Yep.
Okay. That's cool. Sekimoto is a great tag worker. So I think that will kind of play to his strengths. I mean, he's a good singles worker too. Great singles worker. But he's really good in tag teams. Maybe – I have no clue if he and Sawa have worked together or have worked at all, period. So that sounds great. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So there you go. Got to get my tickets for the Thursday show. Because I was thinking – I think that's up against the WrestleCon Super Show. And I was like, oh, I'd like to see those other dudes. But now I'm like, oh, I love Evolve. Evolve's on a roll right now.
I hate to like not get to see a single WrestleCon show, but that's what we're looking at. But I can't remember what's going on Saturday, like in the afternoon, because Progress is at 12, and I think we have tickets to that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to Ring of Honor at 8.
Yeah.
Or 7 or whenever it should, whenever they run. But I like the middle of the day is free, so I'm not really sure what's going on at WrestleCon. Anyway.
Cool.
Yeah, so what this ends up with is kind of Dickinson is laid out in one corner, Perot's laid out in the other corner, and then they kind of get up, and Dickinson bashes Perot with a chair, and then suddenly it's a match. And we're going to have a no disqualification match with the Dirty Daddy and Perot. I'm really curious, AT, to get your take on this match.
I thought it was good. I thought it was like a fun plunder brawl with a lot of like silly chair spot, you know, a lot of like throwing chairs into the ring, you know, kind of like a an homage to the Public Enemy moment. They certainly beat each other up enough, and there was a lot of chair stuff. It was good. It was like what it should have been. It's like, you're like, oh, don't know. Like, how much I usually you're like, oh, do you want to pin Perot in the first, like sort of the end match? And then it's like, well, Dickinson has the title shot the next night. So you like, don't want to do that. But yeah, Dickinson was pretty vicious, choking Perot with the broom and doing all that stuff. I thought it was an interesting take in the sense that, like, Perot in the end have always had like the element of surprise in their fights with Catch Point. And now it's like when Chris Dickinson's ready, like he can handle him. So I thought that this was a good match. I thought Perot looked good. I thought he looked like a little tentative at times. Like there are times where he does stuff that should look more like when he did the powerbomb through the like two chairs. Like that was something that maybe should have looked more. It didn't look as vicious as you would expect that spot to look. It seems like he's still a little bit tentative in some of the things that he does. Like he's almost like doesn't want to do it all the way because he's worried about hurting someone because he doesn't know about like the technique. But maybe that may be like over analysis on my part. But I try not to comment on like criticize the mechanics as much because it's like, you know. It's like the magic tricks we muggles don't understand, but that's what it looked like. Did you see that too? Or was that like my imagination?
No, I think I definitely saw something there of like, they got thrown off for a second. I wasn't sure exactly what was happening. I could have been, that Perot was being tentative. So I wasn't really sure about that, but there definitely was a hiccup.
The hiccup was that, Dickinson threw him the chair and was going to do like a Van Terminator kind of spin kick, but then he dropped it. And then Dickinson like picked it up and threw him the chair again. And then he did it.
Oh, no. Yeah. I just mean
just, like, on that power. Yeah.
I felt something there, like a little hiccup.
Yeah.
But, I can't say what it was. I'm kind of with you as a non-wrestler, unless it's just obvious. I try not to.
Yeah. Even though I just did it. So apologies.
Yeah. I do it sometimes, but so bizarrely, I don't know. I love this match.
Really? You loved it?
I went 4 stars on it.
Oh, wow. Because I was like, this is good. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't like 4 stars.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Dickinson was really brutal. The match, it's a no DQ match, and it seemed dangerous at times. Like, it felt like somebody could get hurt. And to me, I know how you feel about rating matches, but when I'm rating matches, I try to think, like, did this accomplish what it was trying to accomplish?
Oh, it definitely did.
Right. And if they could make me seem like make me concerned at times about what was going to happen, like when Perot had Dickinson up for that like tombstone or whatever it was going to be, you know, off the stage, I was like tense. It's like, oh, what's going to happen here? You know, I wasn't expecting a dick grab to end that spot. But, you know, you do what you got to do. But I thought the fans were really into the match. Like the crowd seemed into it.
Yeah.
The finish was really cool, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, it worked for me.
The Pazuzu bomb on the pile of chairs. Yeah, that was sweet.
Yeah. So
yeah, that was cool.
I just thought everything they went for worked in the match.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to downgrade it that much because I thought they did what they were trying to do and that it was really good. I enjoyed it. The end came out after the match, and Odinson ended up slamming Dickinson on a pile of chairs. They get their heat back, which I think is important for, you know, the end kind of to win out at that point. I don't know if it's setting up a hierarchy where Odinson is like the big dog of the end. We'll see how that plays out. Catch point eventually runs off the end, which works also. So I thought this was a successful segment on the show.
I agree.
Kind of accomplished everything it needed to. So that was good. Yeah, I hated to see Perot get pinned so early, but it works. It made sense in the context. Now we follow that up with AR Fox and Matt Riddle, a match that, of course, as everyone knows, has happened before in Evolve. So the finish this time, Fox pinned Matt Riddle after a top rope Canadian Destroyer, a big boot, low main pain, and the 450 splash. You were really looking forward to this match, AT. Well, you're really into AR Fox.
Yeah.
So did this match deliver for you?
Yeah, I really liked it. And I just love, I mean, AR Fox is the best. He's so cool. And it just blows my mind. Like, everyone loves Matt Riddle, but I just, like, can't imagine watching AR Fox come out with his fur bangle and his, like, obnoxious loud crew and his thick bay and, like, and they're, like, dancing and jumping up and down and it's so hype. And then being like, no, the cool person that I'm going to root for is like this doofy stoner bro. You know, I just don't get it. I don't get like, I just, you know, it's like when the posse came out and like put AR Fox's hat on Timothy Barr and then like got all up in his face. Like that was great. That was inspired. I love all those dudes. I saw the student too. Two of the dudes who were in the posse were in the four-way match the next night at Spot Style Battle. And, like, they're great. They're so much fun. Yeah, I love the act. I thought this was a really good match. I thought, I thought it was, like, a good back and forth, a lot of action. I was happy to see AR Fox get the win.
Yeah, I mean, definitely when you see Matt Riddle, like, dancing before the match.
Right. Yeah. Talk about that spot and like the obvious conclusion anyone would draw.
I mean, folks, Matt Riddle is actually lame. Like, you know, obviously AR Fox and his crew are dancing, like, but not really even dancing, just kind of like.
They're like vibing.
They're vibing. Yeah. They're just like vibing on the way out to the ring. So then Matt Riddle's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm cool. I can dance.
Mocking their cool dancing.
Right. And he does it. I don't know. Was he mocking the dancing?
Yeah, well, because he did that fake, like, booty shake. It was, like, intended to mock.
See, I thought, I mean, that may be true. You may be right. I thought he was, like, it's just a Matt Riddle thing to be like, oh, if something cool is happening, I need to be a part of it.
I didn't read it that way.
Okay. All right. That may have been projection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Anyway, it sucked. Like, he looked dumb. And I was like, wow, that is the lamest that Matt Riddle has ever looked.
Right. Yeah. Because he was like, I just want to dance like you guys. And it was like kind of in a mocking tone.
That's true. Anyway, it sucked.
And then AR Fox gets on his back and like mocks him by pretending to be in guard. You know, like he pretends he's like doing jujitsu. Like that was really funny.
Yeah, that really.
I don't know.
And he kind of carried that through the beginning of this match. Like every time Fox had a chance, he like did something to mock Matt Riddle, which I really liked.
Yeah. I think like obviously our Riddle fatigue has been building, but I think being in the room, like I just felt like an alien because it was like all these people, like I went to three shows over 24 hours and like and at every show, people like saying happy birthday to Matt Riddle. And I was like, he's cool. Like he's good. And I liked both of them. I really liked both of the matches he had this weekend, but I was just like, I don't know. I just feel like there's like a lot of cooler, more interesting people in this company, but.
Yeah, I thought this match was legitimately great. It was the third match in a row that I rated it 4 stars on this show. And I thought it was a real good example. You know, they talk about in like UFC of styles make fights. And I know that isn't the same in wrestling, but I thought it worked here because you had AR Fox's like super fast pace that he brings to matches. And then, but it also had kind of the stiff, hard-hitting stuff that Matt Riddle brings to a match. And Riddle never slowed Fox's pace down. He went along with Fox's pace, which is what made the match great. He didn't try to turn it into a Matt Riddle match, but it also wasn't solely an AR Fox match. They kind of blended the best parts of what they both do. And I think that's what really made it shine. I liked, like, I'm not all into this Riddle, whether he's into rope breaks or wants to have rope breaks banned from Evolve, like whatever. But it was cool that they integrated that into this match. Especially commentary was using it to be like, okay, every time that Fox used the ropes to get a break, they were like, oh, you know, Riddle hates rope breaks, which I thought was cool. And then it's like, maybe it's because Riddle is playing at Fox's pace, but then eventually, you know, to end the match, Riddle kind of goes away from what he normally does and tries to go up top to really kind of do what Fox is doing in the match. And that's what cost him the match. So I thought that was a really great storytelling, and I was overjoyed that AR Fox won, not just because I'm a little down on Riddle, but it's the right call story-wise. And, you know, somebody needed someone else needed to be elevated. And I thought AR Fox was as good a choice as any.
Yeah, I agree. Good read on the finish of the match.
Wow, so, thanks.
Sharp analysis. Sincerely, yeah, I didn't think of that.
After the match, AR Fox reminds everyone that he's going to beat Keith Lee. And I think this is an announcement that it's going to be at the next show, Evolve 100. So something to look forward to. That's going to be February 17th at La Boom. So I imagine the crowd will be excited for that. The next match, for the FIP Championship, Fred Yehi versus Austin Theory. A reminder, of course, that this match was fought under FIP rules, which means there are no rules. Everybody had to say that like three times. Can we talk about Timothy Barr for a second? I know we've had a lot of tangents on the show, and it's going to end up
being let's hear it.
2 hours plus. First of all, I kind of I don't want to dislike Timothy Barr, but the fact that he's not Joanna Rose makes me dislike him immediately and like have real bad feelings. Yeah. Well, she was great as a ring announcer. Mm-hmm. Like, she would kind of
like, she brought, I think, like, because we're Americans, we just think everyone with an English accent is posh, but yeah, she did have that effect. You're like, there's like an air of like gravitas to these proceedings on account of her accent.
And she would like subtly banter with the crowds. I thought like she was part of the show. And I get that Barr is new at this role, but he's very stiff and kind of lunky. And what he really like, when I look at him, I think this guy probably goes on Facebook, and like when CNN posts a news article, he responds and it's like, yeah, the Democrats are ruining America. Like, that's the vibe that I get from Timothy Barr.
Or the, that's like mean.
You think so?
I mean, it's,
and he like,
it's harsh. It's harsh, is what I'm saying.
He capitalizes rats in Democrats. Don't you think so? My dad like Facebooks like this, so I'm thinking that's probably what Timothy Barr does too.
I can see it.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I just had to get that off my chest.
Just an unsubstantiated.
Oh yeah, I have no evidence of that.
Swipe at a total stranger.
That's what podcasts.
Total ad hominem.
Yeah. Well, look, like Wikiphase said, I'm a rock star, and I can say these things.
Yeah.
That's when you're living the life, you're able to do that. Mm. Look, speaking of living the life, Austin Theory.
I just want to be clear one moment. The person saying this is Aaron Bentley. That's the one that's in Kentucky. He's not the one who's at these wrestling shows. If
look,
one of us are here, one of the voices at the wrestling show, it's not, it's, you know, the person who you would want to beat up isn't there.
Look, I'm not saying that Timothy Barr actually does that. I'm just saying he reminds me of someone who might do that. That's the vibe that I get from him. Maybe he's like, what? Maybe he hangs out with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah.
At the shows. I have no clue.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thanks for listening, Big Tim. So, Austin Theory gets the win. He pins Fred Yehi after an assist from Priscilla Kelly and, of course, hitting the ataxia. This was there was a lot of booking going on in this match. Jason Kincaid comes out because Priscilla Kelly is interfering in the match. So Kincaid comes out to try to stop that from going on. Priscilla Kelly slaps him. Kincaid kind of gets in Kelly's face, but Austin Theory hits him, you know, and kind of ends that. That allows Fred Yehi to get the jump on Theory. Kelly grabs Yehi by the ankles, but Yehi takes that opportunity to stomp on Priscilla Kelly's hand and kick her out of the ring. So there was a lot going on here. I guess, AT, tell us what you thought about the match, but also, like, everything that was going on during the match.
Yeah, I thought this was a good match. I thought, like, the star of the match was Priscilla Kelly. I think she's, like, more and more, the more I watch her, I'm like, oh, she's great. I get it. She's a real presence in these matches. Her, like, timing on that when Theory was chasing Yehi around the ring, and then she went the other way and hit that sort of running, you know, tope from the apron. That looked great. Her, you know, yelping and climbing on Yehi's back and try to choke him was great. She's a presence and she's great. I think she's really good. So I thought that was really good. That was kind of the sort of like the big take home for me was like, oh yeah, like we've been seeing sort of Gabe talk about how like in the new year, just talking about like Priscilla Kelly, like Austin Theory and Priscilla Kelly as like, you know, both of them as performers. And you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah. So I thought about that. I thought it was a good, and I like that, I thought it was a good match. And I like that it sort of progressed the story of like, once again, you know, Theory beats Yehi, but he needs the help of Priscilla Kelly. Cause she, you know, hit that drop kick onto the chair onto him, which was cool before, the finish. So I thought, you know, we've talked about the Austin Theory, Jason Kincaid stuff, and we're not as into that. I did want to talk a little bit about, there's some like casual misogyny in this match. So a moment ago, you took an unsubstantiated shot at a member of the Evolve announcing team, and now I'm going to take a substantiated one. I think that we talked in the past about how there were hints that like Ron Niemi's opinions of women were like not great. You know, like there were things that we were like, okay, this is not like what a feminist would say. And then here we had kind of like a crystal clear, like, okay, you're like, you have a shitty opinions about women. Was where during the match, Ron Niemi remarks to Lenny Leonard that there's nothing more dangerous than a crazy woman, Lenny. And it's just gross. It's like, get that shit off the broadcast. Like, I don't want to hear that. If, you know, like if you, you know, if you can't trust your announcer to commentate on a match where there's a woman involved without saying something shitty about how women are crazy, like you should put them in timeout until there's all men again. Cause I just like, I don't know. I just have zero tolerance for it. I know it's like a part and parcel with wrestling. Like I know if we did a show about Lucha Underground, I'd constantly be like driving myself crazy watching Matt Stryker, but it's just like, I don't know. You don't need to say something like that. It's like, it's like, it's garbage. And then there was a spot where, you know, Yehi stomped on Priscilla Kelly's hand after she attacked him. And I get it. Like, I get it that she's attacking first and he's not like beating her up and she's a wrestler. But the problem with like the violence against women on these shows that are like outside the context of a scripted match is that, or like a scheduled match, is that like it always opens the door for some cretin to say something shitty, right? I've never been at a wrestling show where there was an instance where a man beat up hit a female manager and like no one said anything. Like it's always opening the door for one of the dickheads in your crowd. Like on Saturday night, some guy piped up. He was with this dude in a collared shirt with his kid who must have been like 5 or 6 years old, just goes, "Spanker." And you're just like, what are you fucking doing? You know, and that made me mad. And then I'm also like mad that like, I don't know. That's the thing, because it's like in a vacuum, like Yehi stomping Priscilla Kelly's hand is fine. It makes sense. But you're always, there's always that like, I mean, I don't know if I told the story in the podcast, but like I remember going to a Ring of Honor final battle where like Kevin Steen, like the big blow off to his feud with Mike Bennett was him powerbombing Maria. And I just remember the dude behind me just yelling, "Dead whore, dead whore. Nobody likes a dead whore." So it's like, there's always going to be dudes in the crowd who are like really, really excited for the man to get the retribution on the women. Like, I remember like being on a bus to WrestleMania for the one that was in New Jersey and just being in the bus with this dude who was like, I fucking hate that Vicky Guerrero. You know, it would be great if someone just got up and just threw her off the fucking, you know, off the fucking top of the stage. You know, I just fucking hate that bitch. And so you're, whenever there's like an act like that, you're always kind of like, you're sort of like priming the pump for someone who has a lot of like real issues around women and masculinity, sort of like releasing that toxin into your audience. And if you want to be a place where like that is inclusive, if you want to like really mean it when you wear those PW girl gang shirts, you know, about how you're all inclusive all together, you should try to make sure you create an environment that fosters that and make sure your commentators aren't saying dumb misogynistic shit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, of course. You know, the first sin in this, of course, is having a woman character who is, her whole story is that she is corrupting a pure young man. Right? Like, that's where she starts from.
It's the original
sin.
That's
the original sin. Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, and I mean that in a couple of ways, I guess. So, like, you're almost, you're putting yourself in a position where eventually someone is going to have to get retribution on her. And there are no other women in the promotion other than Candy Cartwright. So, you know, like something bad is going to have to happen. And you don't want to put your, because of exactly what AT is talking about, you don't want to put your crowd in that position because something bad is going to, something gross is going to happen.
Yeah. And there are moments in this feud where it feels like it's building to the big angle of Jason Kincaid attacking Priscilla Kelly. And I think that they avoided it because it seemed like, you know, when he snapped, he only attacked Austin Theory. But like, if they're thinking about that being kind of the blow off, I really, really hope that they reconsider.
Yeah, that's like the worst thing that could possibly happen. Because that's when I'm watching it, I personally was like, okay, this isn't that bad, like what Yehi is doing. But I was thinking at the same time, I was very uncomfortable about it. Even though it didn't personally offend me, in that moment, I was like, only bad things can come from this.
Right, because it's like the act is, exactly, the act isn't bad, but you're constantly sitting there like, oh God, I hope nothing bad happens. I hope this stops here. So anyway, so those are my thoughts.
And I felt bad for Lenny Leonard because, like, what is Lenny supposed to do on the broadcast? I mean, I guess he could call out Ron.
Yeah, but that's asking a lot. So it's a tough ask for, you know, from a male ally. I mean, you would like, yeah, it, but you're like, you're not like, man, I'm not mad at Lenny.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, Lenny is in a position where he's doing his job.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought Lenny was kind of clever to be, to like, right, make a comment about Ron's wife at that point. Like, I know Ron's wife is watching.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So that was pretty cool. I felt bad for Lenny because he was put in a really tough position.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Ron's going to be on the next shows, but I wish they would address that with him at least. If they're not going to get rid of him. Okay. The last match we haven't talked about on this show was a non-title match, Jaka versus Keith Lee. Jaka, hey, the wrong boys were right for once. Jaka wins. He defeats Keith Lee with the Chala kick after a little distraction from AR Fox, who he and his posse came out on the stage there at La Boom and got Keith Lee's opinion. Okay. Jaka wins another non-title match. And this match ruled.
Yeah, the king of the non-title match does it again. Yeah, I thought this was very good. It was interesting because it was like he came out and there was like no real it was weird. I thought that there would be more people on Jaka's side, but there really weren't. And it was just like, but I thought that the match was like smartly worked. Like it was worked like what you would think these people would do if they were put in a fight of sort of Jaka, you know, Lee being bigger and stronger and Jaka trying to sort of pick his spots and kick him in the leg when he could. But ultimately Lee being sort of more of the dominant player. And it was weird in the sense that like, I thought that there would be more like enthusiasm for the Jaka comeback, but the crowd was really more treating it like a Keith Lee extended squash. I was just surprised that there wasn't, like, after his recent support, performances, it just feels like the people are still sleeping on Jaka. And so, yeah, it was kind of a weird match in that sense. But I was like, this is good. This is like this was a smart, well done match. And yeah, I was surprised that Jaka won. Sometimes the Chala kick doesn't it's not the most like devastating looking finisher, especially when it's done to someone who's as big as Keith Lee. So you saw it and it was like kind of a surprise when the ref counted three. It was like, oh, he won the match. Huh? You know? So yeah, interesting finish to a match that it felt like Keith Lee had been dominating. And yeah, another big win for Jaka. So I'm happy to see him continue to like go on his rise.
Tell me if I'm reading too much into this.
Yeah.
I feel like there's this story going on with Jaka, or at least what he has in common in his wins over Zack Sabre and Keith Lee is that he finds a way to counter the champion's finish. Like in this match, Keith Lee's trying to hit the spirit bomb at ground zero, but Jaka sees him coming. You know, as the announcer always says, you know, he was watching tape and he was ready for that, you know. But he's able to do that in both of these big matches and get the win. So, A, I might be reading too much into that, but it just kind of seems like he's the guy who's prepared in these matches. But then when he finally gets the title shot, they've got something else to get over him that he doesn't know about yet, that he's not prepared for. And I don't know if that's the story, but it's at least interesting from my perspective to look at it that way.
Right. No, that's an interesting take. Or like but I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens when he wrestles Keith Lee again.
Right.
Presumably he'll get a title shot and we'll see whether that's the story or we're imagining it.
Because what you really want to see is a rematch where the champion wins because he's able to come up with, you know, another move that Jaka can't counter. And then, like, if you really wanted to pay this off, then he would get another match where he would counter it, or he would be ready for everything.
Keith Lee, Keith Lee, because he went for the spirit bomb in the ground zero, and Jaka found a way out of both of them.
Right.
And then finally, like, Keith Lee, you know, he does another thing and wins the match. And then, that would be the satisfying thing.
Right. Well, we'll talk more about Jaka in a little bit and where he's going long term. But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. It's like that would be a very New Japan story to tell. And I know everybody doesn't tell stories that way. So it could just be me.
Sure.
Looking for it. All right, let's move on to Evolve 99. Sunday at St. Finbar's Catholic Church.
Did you want to talk about the style battle?
Oh, well, you can. I did not watch the show. So
all right, quick thing about style battle. It was pretty cool. There weren't a lot of people there. Everything was solid. The AR Fox's students were fun in their four-way. It was like three of the students, two of the guys are in the posse, another guy who I don't think is in the posse, but I think is a student, and then a fourth guy from New York. And the two posse guys, Liam Gray, the one who, I think that's his name, is like, he has this shirt that's like, it's a vibe, and then the sort of like huskier white dude in the posse with the beard were in the match. And they were just really fun, joking around and like going up to the referee and being like, you know, whose man's is this? And I just thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. There was also like one insane like Tower of Doom stop spot where it was just like some dude, it wound up taking like a brain buster on it. It was just, it looked sick. And then, so that was cool. And then Nick Gage versus Walter was fun. I was kind of bummed. Like, I wouldn't have gone all the way out to Brooklyn for the show if I knew what it was going to be. Like, it was good, but it was like, nothing was spectacular. The post-match brawl was like, it felt like just as it was heating up and getting really violent, the match ended, you know, it was called off in a no contest. But, I don't know, it was cool to see Nick Gage live, and it was cool to like, that they like, the post-match brawl was great. It was a great angle. And given the interaction between Keith Lee and Nick Gage at the end, it would seem that there will be future sort of WWN GCW conflict, perhaps at WrestleMania weekend. So that was cool. Cool show. Had a good time. That's my style battle review. Matt Riddle won. He beat Joey Janela in the final. That was good. Oh, and also Joey Janela cut a promo where he was like, you know, everyone, you know, Gabe and Sal don't think I'm good enough. And like, you know, I should be, you know, in Evolve. You know, why aren't I getting booked here? So that's interesting. That would be an interesting flavor to add to the Evolve mix if it were to happen.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Yeah.
My mother was in town for the weekend, as I mentioned on the last episode. So I could not make the time to catch Style Battle live, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone.
Apology accepted.
Thank you. Getting back to Evolve 99, Brody King is the first guy out. You may remember that on Evolve 98, they did not do the preliminary matches that they started doing last month, but they were going to do them again on Evolve 99. We kind of theorized that it had to do with timing at LaBoom. Haven't confirmed that, but makes as much sense as anything. So Brody King comes out, and then Darby Allin is the next one out. He grabs the microphone, and he tells the crowd that he put his heart and soul into the championship match, but it just wasn't good enough. So now he deserves to start back at the bottom. So our first match was Darby Allin versus Brody King, and the match ultimately ends in a time limit draw, which I thought was pretty interesting, considering the story. I really like the story here. I thought it's really cool to do this, like, Darby has to go back to the bottom thing.
Right. And also, I felt like it was not only did he go back to the bottom, but the sort of, you know, he was, like, punishing himself by putting his hands behind his back and letting, you know, Brody hit him. But the one thing I took from it, it felt like it was almost going back to the start in the style of the match. Like, it was a return to the crazy flying, getting himself killed Darby Allin, who was, I mean, getting thrown into the pillars and tossed over the guardrail and he did an insane, like, tope con hello kind of thing, or an over the top rope, like, somersault tope through Brody King, who was sitting in a chair. And then he, you know, he did that spot. I think he might have done that in the DJZ match too, but he also did that sort of, like, that crazy dive when with Brody sort of hung over the barricade. So it was like, it was a return to the, it was almost like the wrestling skills failed him and he returned to the safe place of, like, trying to get himself killed. That might be overanalyzing it, but that was my read.
No, I like that take. And does that explain, like, why he couldn't finish him off and it goes to a draw?
Maybe, right? Like, if he were trying to go, like, he went for an arm bar or two, but, like, if he were trying to, you know, if he wasn't so hung up, if he didn't take the match outside as much and do a bunch of dives, like, maybe there would have been time for him to get the win. And he also was, like, losing when this match happened, because the dude did, like a backdrop driver off, or not a, but whatever, you know, like a back suplex off the top rope. Yeah.
All right, but I'm into this. I'm fascinated to see where this goes with Darby.
Right. Because it's like everything they've done with him so far has been terrific.
Yeah.
So they have I have, like, a lot of good faith with them right now.
Does he have to, like, win a prelim to get back on the main card? That would be cool. Like, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Whatever they need to do to, like, kind of build back the anticipation for the rematch.
Right. I'm glad that they don't appear to be going right back to Darby versus Zach.
Right. Because they also have that's the thing we'll talk about a little later too, I think, is that they have just a lot of challengers lined up for both of their champions right now.
Yeah, so I hope they let this one breathe a little. And like you said, they've got a lot of good faith built up with regard to Darby, so I'm going to stick with that. Mm-hmm. The next prelim, Jared 120 taking on Snoop Strikes. Jared gets the win. I don't have much to say about this. I like Snoop Strikes. Jared, I still don't care about.
Yeah. As Trevin Adams put it at the end of this match, at the end of the day, it's all about Jarek 120. Disturb reality in full effect.
Yeah, that says it all, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, everyone should check out the Jarek music video, his year in review. It's a lot of, if you want to see Jarek make out with his girlfriend or kiss his girlfriend a lot, this is the video for you. Our boy Oaken looked it up. I think there were like 23 kisses in the video. So if you're into kissing Jarek, this is, it's a good vid. Shows his vision board, his goal for the years. I think he got some Bitcoin. He he had a WWE tryout, apparently.
Yeah.
Crossed that off the list. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's like my general feeling or my general sort of like first instinct is that like all YouTubers are sociopaths. But I hope that's not the case for Jarek.
I'm not going to comment on that. The video is insane. It is exactly 4 minutes and 20 seconds long. If you're wondering, I don't know. Did you know the song that it was sent to? Yeah. So I don't know. He like did he took great detail to try to match the visuals to the lyrics of the song. Or he wrote the song. I got no clue. I don't know anything about the song. But yeah, if you're really into dudes who want you to tell them how hot their girlfriend is, you should watch this video. Because it's like, here's my girlfriend's ass. And also, here's my girlfriend taking all her clothes off in a hot tub. And yeah, so if you like to hang out with dudes who are like always just telling you about how much they fuck, then you will love this video.
Which I assume is most of our listenership.
maybe we'd have more listeners if we talk more about sex on the show.
Yeah. Well, I need to fuck more first.
Classic dry boy AT. All right. Austin Theory comes out. He reminds everyone that he's beaten Yehi. He left Zack Sabre Jr. lying. He pulls a real Jarek here where he tells everybody how young he is and how great his body is. maybe they should do a video where they're kissing. I've shipped a lot of people with.
Yeah, a lot of shipping, a lot of good kiss vids. I think, if Gabe ever goes to WWE full time, give us the pencil. A lot of dudes kissing. That's our pitch.
I got to say, for two straight dudes, I think we'd have a lot of guys kissing in our in our version of Evolve.
Well, it'd be sure. Fresh and innovative.
It would be.
Yeah.
But I think the point Austin Theory was trying to make was that he rules and he's going to be the next Evolve champion. Oh, it's the first game. He's got to get rid of Jason Kincaid. So our first match is Austin Theory and Jason Kincaid. Strange finish where Kincaid apparently injures his knee going for a double stomp, but Theory hung up in the ropes. Theory moves out of the way. Kincaid is supposed to be, you know, shoot injured, and so the ref declares a no contest and waves off the match. I don't know. Weird finish.
Kind of a weird finish, but I don't know. I was okay with it. It wasn't like a shitty WWE finish where they're just like fighting too hard. You know, it was just that like it was like this dude, the story is that this guy is injured. And so like I'm not going to be mad at that. That's like a totally reasonable angle to have a story to tell. And let me tell you, though, this crowd hated Austin Theory. I mean, he had really tremendous heat in the building. Yeah, I mean, they were just booing the shit. I mean, they in a good way, like he just had like people were booing him. And they were really into booing him. And after the match, when the refs were checking on Kincaid, and Theory was going in and stomping his knee, and Priscilla Kelly's diving in there and hitting her knee with her fist. She was great there. I thought that was good, really good work. People were really booing. People were upset. So, it's working, I think.
I'm not going to go hard on Kincaid here because I already talked about him. Yeah. I would just like Theory to get away from him, and this feels like it's going to continue.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. After the end of the match, I was like, I guess this is going to keep going.
Yeah. The refs check on Kincaid after the match, but Austin Theory and Priscilla Kelly attack him. That's it. That's what happened. Our next match, Timothy Thatcher takes on Fred Yehi. I think I was more right about this one, AT. Thatcher ultimately defeats Fred Yehi with Fujiwara armbar.
Yeah, this was a snooze fest. I don't know, it was fine. I am into like the one Fred Yehi. I'm like into the Fred Yehi guys. I like Fred more or less, But I'm into the Fred Yehi gimmick of the crowd just yelling at him to do a thing and him doing it. Like in this match, they were like, take his scarf. And like he took Timothy Thatcher's Catchpoint scarf, or his ring comp scarf rather. And like the crowd was like the biggest spot of the match and everyone got fired up. And it reminded me of like last month when everyone was like, take your shoes off. And he was like, yeah, I guess I'll just take my shoes off and like wrestle the rest of the match barefoot, whatever. So yeah, Fred Yehi is game in doing what, and you know, going the extra mile for the fans. So salute to Fred Yehi, but this was this is not for me. This is a lot of grapple fucking, just a match where you're like, what's happening? Where is this going? So I don't know. The one that I love when Thatcher does that thing where he like knees the grounded opponent. I'm into that. But I don't know. Yeah, it was fine.
Fred Yehi debuted in PWG also.
Oh, yeah, good for Fred. Fred and it was, so David Starr has been there before. Was that David Starr's debut too?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't say. But David Starr was definitely there.
They wrestled each other.
Yeah, I don't keep up with PWG really. But I do think that's the mark of like making it to a certain level in indie wrestling.
Right.
When you get to PWG. So like that rules.
Absolutely.
For Fred. I'm very happy
for him.
Good
for Fred. Hats off to Fred. He's worked hard.
Yeah,
he always works hard in the shows that we watch.
Yeah, the first time I saw Fred, and like this is going to out me as a fake geek because it wasn't that long ago, but I saw him wrestle in like a barn against this dude called Slim J.
Okay,
and this was like a very pimped match a couple of years ago where they had like a 2 out of 3 falls match, I think, and I was like, oh, okay, this guy's cool, and he has like just skyrocketed since then. So I'm very happy for him that he's doing so well.
Yeah, Slim J from 2002, from the 2002 Ring of Honor shows.
Right.
That's yeah, right. So with the Eminem haircut and the wild flips. And he's still going.
He's still working, and he still looks about the same age as he did in 2002. So
hey, that's cool.
Working out for him.
Yeah.
Good match. I wish I knew who it was for. I would tell everybody to go watch it. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm happy for Fred. That's it. That's the point I was trying to make.
Oh, there's a lot of good tweets right now. I just want to Nick Gage tweets, WWN stands for Weirdo Wrestling Network. These dudes stopped the fight because I started throwing chairs around. Shit is weak. Oh, and Keith Lee, mind your own fucking business. Nothing worse than a dude who jumps in during someone else's fight. I see you, bud. MDK.
Yeah, that rules.
Yeah.
So I got absolutely killed for saying that I didn't really get Nick Gage.
Yeah.
Like it was like my friends were really going at me.
Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah.
No let up. No like, well, Aaron's our friend, so we'll not go that hard. It was like Aaron must be killed.
Yeah. They saw your shit take and they were like, somebody fucked up on this one. That's what they were like. Yeah,
yeah. They definitely made me go sit in a corner.
Absolutely,
by myself. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry that I don't understand post irony. Apparently,
yeah, yeah.
I apologize to everyone.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'll do better.
Yeah, good.
thanks. The next match was a Tornado Rules tag team match. Tracy Williams, Dominic Guarini taking on Perreault and Odinson of the End. Ultimately, Perreault kind of gets his win back in a way, pins Tracy Williams after an overkill powerbomb lung blower combination. I think it's called overkill, right?
Yes.
Two moves. I've now thoroughly explained that. What did you think of this match?
I thought this was really good. And I think that, like, I think going into this weekend, the thing that I wanted to see from the End was, like, whether how good they were at wrestling. And, yeah, they're good. I think that, like, or at least, like, they're good enough to do everything they need them to do. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
And they look big and mean. I mean, there was a spot here. The camera sort of missed it, which was unfortunate. But live, I think Perreault whipped Tracy Williams, like, across the ring. And then sort of Odinson met him at an angle and just fucking trucked him with the pounce. And it looked so good. It was awesome, and I think the camera like mostly missed it on the VOD, which is a bummer. but it was like, oh, these are just like big mean boys. And then another sick spot was like Guarini countering the, he was like running at Odinson. Odinson went to powerbomb and then he turned it into like a head scissors triangle. I was like, oh, this is ill. This is great. Yeah, this was like a, this was a fun and wild match with, yeah. So I thought that, yeah, I think that the end has acquitted themselves quite nicely this weekend. And yeah, I'm ready for whatever they're going to do with them next.
Yeah, it's like everybody doesn't have to be South Pacific Power Trip or whatever in this promotion. And I'm not saying these guys are bad workers, but it makes me think of like NXT. And I'm not going to say like I know everything about those dudes and how good or bad they are. I don't. I've only seen like the big takeover matches. But I remember early on thinking they were not going to be very good and I wasn't sure how they were going to hang. But then when you put them in the ring with like Gargano and Ciampa, have a great, literal great match. And so I think if these guys are working with Doom Patrol and those kind of the tag teams that, or even like Anthony Henry and James Drake, they could work with those guys right in this promotion. Yeah. And absolutely do enough to have good matches that won't stick out on these cards.
Yeah, and Odinson seems pretty athletic.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
He's got some pep in his step. So
yeah, and Perot can be very brutal. Like, mm-hmm. He can come off as, like, mean and tough. And, like, you need just some big guys who can beat down some folks from time to time.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Another, we're talking about the Evolve gumbo. And all the different ingredients, and they're a nice fit. It's a lot cooking for that Evolve right now.
And that was kind of why I loved, speaking of Perot, why I loved that Perot-Chris Dickinson match so much, was that it added a lot of variety to the show.
Right.
I know there was another no DQ match later on, but they were very different from each other. And it's not like the Grapple Fuck era. It's like everything is different. They really are doing more of a variety show, which you kind of need to get through these shows like all the time.
Yeah.
All right. So the next match was Jaka versus Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle ultimately defeats Jaka via submission with the Bro Mission. Man, this was a real letdown for me after the night before when Matt Riddle worked a really good match with Fox. Jaka had a really good match with Keith Lee. This did not get there for me. It was kind of like a normal, like I talked about how Matt Riddle kind of went along with AR Fox or blended their styles. This was a Matt Riddle match, complete with the no selling German sequence, which if I'd been interested in the match at that point, that's when I would have completely checked out. That's just not for me. They seemed to abandon the whole ropes thing with Riddle. Like, he used the ropes for breaks in this match, which I thought was lame. And I really just wanted to see Jaka win. Like, did Matt Riddle really need to beat Jaka here? He just got the big win over the champion. I wanted to see him continue to elevate.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm like, what did Riddle do? Well, but then it's like, are you going to have Riddle lose two in a row for have Riddle be like 2-4 in his last six matches?
Yeah, but like, nothing sticks to Riddle.
Right, that's true, right? It doesn't matter. He's going to come out until they're ready to sort of push him back for a title. Might as well. No, that's fair. Yeah. I thought that it was funny because it was like last night, Jaka worked like this very smart, thoughtful match. And it was like people like were like, oh, all right, whatever. What else you got? You know, like didn't seem like they were like very into him. And then it was like tonight he came out. He was like, I got that ignorant shit you like. You know, like he comes out and like they start. It was funny because it was like, I'm watching this match and I'm like, there's so much stuff where I'm just shaking my head. I was like, this is so dumb. But like the crowd was just eating it up. So you're like, all right, well, I'm having fun, you know, because like they start off with that standoff where, you know, Jock is yelling Yow and Matt Riddle's yelling bro, like they're Pokemon. And I'm just like, this is dumb. But like everyone's chanting it. And I was like, all right, well, I got to show my support for Jock. I'll Yow along. And yeah, it was fun. And like the German sequence was like, when they got to like, I guess it was like four no sells in a row, then it became funny. You know, like, I think when you do like one no sell, it's like, oh, this is stupid. But then you do a bunch in a row, it becomes like, it becomes funny. And you're like, oh, and like the crowd's like losing their shit. So you're like, oh, whatever. This is fun. And
what wrestlers do you think could do competing moo and oink chants?
Whoa. Agreed. You know, so like that was fun, and then like
that got no sold worse than the German suplexes.
I'm trying. but yeah, it was just like, and then because you kind of like go the other. It's like, it's a stupid thing with Jaka, but it's also his gimmick, right? And like the, and sort of like the long lineage of wrestling savages, he has like these absurd no sell spots. Like when in the match against like South Pacific Power Trip in Queens earlier this year, where they kept kicking him in the head and he just like shrugged it off and like fired back. And I was like, this is so dumb, but this is awesome, you know? Like, that's like kind of how I felt during this match, where I was like, this is really dumb, but everyone is loving this and it's fun. You know, this doesn't really make sense, but I'm enjoying it. And I thought that, like, you know, when he no-sells the bro to sleep, you're like, I was like, okay, this is hilarious. This is cool. Whatever. You're like, I'm having fun. And then to their credit, I thought the finishing stretch, like after the bro to sleep, no-sell, which was like, kind of like, this is like silly. I thought that like the finishing stretch was good, where they were sort of like, you know, sweeping each other's legs, and you know, I like when Jaka bites the foot. So I thought that like, I thought the finishing stretch was like dramatic and good, and the crowd loved the match, right? Like I thought that Jaka had this like really smart, sound, engaging match the night before, and people were like, ah, whatever, Jaka. And then after this, like, you know, Matt Riddle leaves and he gets this big ovation where he's sitting alone in the ring. So I don't know. I go back and forth as like a critic how much the crowd response should matter. Because it's like, on one hand, it's like popularity doesn't mean that art is good. But on the other hand, pro wrestling is live performance art. The thing that separates it from all the other forms of art and that makes it the best is like that interactivity. And so like, you are playing to a crowd, and they did it really well. This match was like really, really, people were really into it there. So I can't, like, you know, I don't know. It was fun. The people there had a really good time, even though it was like, it was like kind of PWG-ish, where you're like, I feel like this works really well in the building, but if you're watching it at home, you're like, eh. Or like, it's fun, but you're like, I don't know. And it's good that this was the only match on the card like this. I think that if you had like if you had multiple matches that were with a bunch of no selling, you'd want to blow your brains out and it would be PWG. But like,
right.
Yeah. I don't know. That was a long winded and incoherent take, but
no, it was good. Kick it right now. My criticisms. Yeah. Definitely usually come from like whether it's pleasing to me.
Sure.
Not whether it got over in the building. I struggle with that too, because like, if I say to somebody, you know, some movie I don't think is very good, and they're like, well, it made $800 billion.
Right.
Like, well, that doesn't really tell us anything about art. WWE is objectively not the best wrestling.
Yeah.
And yet it's, you know, makes the most money. So, but there is, I mean, if wrestling dies in front of a crowd, then, you know, it's not going to exist very long if the crowd doesn't care for it at all. So, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Right.
Sometimes crowds are dumb. So,
and it's like a great match isn't a great match if the crowd doesn't care.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like I would never want to, even if you're watching it on tape, you're like, you want to see the people be into it. And if it's like, no one cares, you're like, right.
Yeah. There's like that, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko match from like Road Wild or whatever, where they're outside working this match.
Right.
And it goes to like three overtimes because they go to a time limit. And the crowd is like booing every time the match continues, but it's like one of the best worked matches like of all time. So it's like hard to say whether that match sucks or is great.
Right.
It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know where Jaka goes, I guess. That's why I would have liked to see him win. It just seems like he kind of cycles back down here.
Well, you assume he gets his title shot at some point. He has that win, but then it's weird. And like that, the post and the end of the show angle, it's like they're kind of overlooking him, even though he just beat Keith Lee the night before. I don't know. I hope he gets his WWN title shot that he's owed.
He should.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there was a non-title match after this. Walter takes on Zack Sabre Jr. And Walter ultimately gets the win over Zack. with a powerbomb. Did you think, well, you thought this wasn't as good as the Darby match?
Well, that's just like a matter of personal preference. I'm always a guy who's going to prefer a match with a bunch of backstory and sort of contextual relevance. And there's a title on the line and there's like stakes to kind of a great match. That's a great match in a vacuum. But this was a great match in a vacuum. This was just a fucking war. This was great. It was, I'm sure these guys, I know these guys have wrestled a million times in a bunch of other places, but this is the first time I've seen them wrestle each other. And it was just, it was terrific. I thought that they just beat the shit out of each other. And Walter really beat the shit out of Zack Sabre Jr. And it was just like brutal and vicious and fast paced. And yeah, I don't know. It was really terrific.
Yeah, it played into what I was hoping with, you know, Zach being the small guy, trying to use submissions or, you know, limb work the best he could to overcome the big monster who was just bigger and stronger than he was. But Walter just, I mean, he looked like a monster here. I've enjoyed him otherwise in Evolve, but this weekend completely pushed him over the line for me. Like, he was working at a faster pace, even more brutal. The psychology in the matches I thought was better in these matches rather than before. I just loved him here. I thought this was great. Great weekend for him. And it just, like, how many people can have that level of great matches with Darby Allin one night and Walter the next night? I mean, those require two such different things, and Zach just killed both of them.
He's unreal. He's just on another. I mean, because you look at, like, it's like, you know, it's like, yeah. It's like when you look at, like, when you compare them, it's like, who had a better match with Shaka, Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, or Zack Sabre Jr.? It's like Zack Sabre Jr. by a large mile. Like, who had a better match with Darby Allin, Keith Lee, or Zack Sabre Jr.? Zack Sabre, who had a better match with Keith? Well, Riddle's first match with Keith Lee was really good, so I can't necessarily say that, you know. But yeah, you get the point. Like, I think he's really, you know, I don't have any more words. It's been great. It's been a blast. I'm loving it. I just love this match. Like, every time Zach would get up and try to slap him in the face and Walter would just fucking deck him. It was great. It was two just world-class performers.
Yeah.
Kind of doing their shit.
But, like, for the people with the takes about Zach's size, like, watch this match. He doesn't look like he doesn't belong in there with Walter. He proves why he belongs in there with Walter. I mean, so good. After the match, Darby Allin comes out and politely asks Zach, like, please, can I have one more match against you? Zach doesn't get a chance to respond because Walter steps up to Darby and he says, and this was great, he says, this is a professional wrestling ring. What the fuck are you doing here? Which, it ruled. I was so excited.
Yeah, I was like, fuck you, Walter. I was like, booing. I was like, be nice to Darby. He's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so I was Darby, like, oh. Yeah, great. Right.
So Darby pushes Walter, and Walter completely demolishes him with a big boot, puts him in a sleeper, and then just tosses him out of the ring. I couldn't be more excited for Walter versus Darby.
Yeah, I think, like, that's going to be
put great. That right into my vein.
Yeah.
That rules. The main event of this show for the WWN Championship, Chris Dickinson, the Dirty Daddy, challenges Keith Lee. I tried to jump on Ural's bandwagon from the night before and get a Ready for Dirty Daddy hashtag going. Nobody was into it.
Yeah. This was really good. I really liked this match. It was like a nice, compact main event. I was like, this was like a good amount of time for this. Because sometimes you watch, like, especially after the last match, you're like, after a long weekend of wrestling, you don't want like a 40-minute New Japan epic. And this was really good. I thought that I loved Lenny Leonard commentary. It really described what was happening, where he was like, Chris Dickinson only knows one direction, straight ahead, you know. And so I thought that he was great, just kind of like going right after Keith Lee from the opening bell, and Lee just being kind of bigger. I thought that it was like the crowd was into it. I thought that like it was a good sort of like it was a really good performance from Dickinson. I always love his facials and sort of his just sort of his general demeanor as like sort of like a bulging like ball of anger, you know, and just sort of just. Yeah, I thought he was like, I thought all of his, like, especially when he was like firing up towards the end of the match with his sort of like pounding the mat and going for his last comeback. I thought like he looked very real. It felt like, yeah, I bought into the whole, I always like buy into it with him. And I thought that this match was really good. I thought that I was in the same section as the Dirty Daddy, what I assume is the Dirty Daddy's mother. The grimy granny. She was great. One of the best Evolve mom performances. Probably the best one since Sue Beretta at that Long Island show where they were Roppongi Vices in the main event against the Premier Athlete brand. Yeah, she was great. She was like, "Move out of the way, Christopher." And like it just sort of like and she was yelling. She was like, "Eat shit." She was terrific. She was great. Yeah, if I was a star rater, like an extra half star for the grimy granny. She ruled.
Dirty Daddy's mom, go on Evolve Pod.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Come on. Come on. You know. Yeah, so that was really great. I lost my shit because Keith Lee has such presence. So like anytime he goes up onto the turnbuckles, you're like, oh, like there's like about to be an earthquake. Like everything looks bigger and like crazier. And so when Dickinson popped out that springboard reverse Rana, which is not what I was expecting him to do, it was and like the visual of like Lee taking the tumble of such a big dude, like falling all the way over, and like the surprise of seeing the move, and also like that it fit in the story of like this angry man who's like giving it everything he has, right? That he's just throwing, leaving it all on the field. Like I just lost my shit. Like I burst out. Like when a spot really hits me and there's like a moment of like pure surprise, I just lose it and just start laughing hysterically. And I was just like screeching and hooting and hollering in my seat. And I loved that spot. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it quite as much as you did. I just think the problem was that I never thought Dickinson was going to win.
Right. And that's why I kept it for me being like the next level for me. Like I thought it was really good, but I wouldn't put it up there with like, you know, the match that came before it or the Darby match,
right?
You know,
right.
But I thought it was really good. And I thought like it delivered for certain. Yeah,
this is hard to quantify or like, I don't know. It's just, Dickinson felt like such a big deal last month.
Right.
In just those little like run-ins and stuff that he was doing on that show. And he didn't have that same feel on this show for whatever reason. I mean, and that's just, I guess your mileage may vary. It's just how you perceive Dickinson. But I just didn't think, it almost would have been weird if he won, honestly. Like the way I was feeling when he came out, when the match started, I was like, oh, I don't know that this feels like you're on that level. So that hurt the match for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like I don't know how I felt coming out, but definitely the match was structured in a way that it was like Keith Lee was clearly a notch above.
Yeah, and maybe that's the right story if that's what you want if that's what you want to do. We were just both saying we thought it was a good opportunity to elevate Dickinson and Jaka.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they took advantage of that, even though Jaka beat Keith Lee.
Right.
I'm still not sure that coming out of the weekend, I feel like they're at a higher level than
I did
before.
They were last week, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, after the match, Stokely Hathaway gets in Keith Lee's face, and that gives Tracy Williams the opportunity to attack Keith Lee from behind. Tracy and Stokely together, of course, fully 50% for each of them, deliver a powerbomb to Keith Lee. And Stokely, of course, takes a moment to flex. Like, I get it. Tracy Williams tells everybody that's how it's done. And then, like, I felt this felt really awkward at the time. Like, Lee, he sells the powerbomb, but then he, like, is able to get up well enough so that he can cut the babyface promo to end the show.
Right.
And Right. So he talks about how he's tired of getting his ass kicked, which is weird because he never loses. And
he lost Saturday. Okay,
but you know what I mean.
Or maybe he never loses except for the night before.
All right, eat shit, AT. And that was straight from Dirty Daddy's mom to your ears.
Yeah.
And he says he's gonna you know take all his pent up frustration out on Tracy Williams and AR Fox. So that's the end of the show, and then AT scarf, and that's how the show ends.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like weird that Tracy Williams is back in the mix after getting pinned twice this weekend. That's why, like, we were talking about this earlier before we went on the air, but like the Evolve title feels so much more meaningful than the WWN title. Just feels like it was the title for that you fought for when you had a personal issue with Matt Riddle, and now it's kind of the title. Although like AR Fox is definitely going for the title, but like it also just feels like kind of like with him getting mad at Tracy Williams, it just feels like in the Chris Dickinson match too, it was just sort of like, I'm pissed off at this guy. I have this title. This is a title match.
Yeah, and even AR Fox's story is like, well, I've already had the Evolve title, so I just kind of want to get the WWN title.
Right. So yeah, it feels like the Evolve title is like superior. It's like, I don't know. It feels like you could have Tracy Williams really get in a groove in this tag team with Dom Guarini, and it seems like I'm not really clamoring for him to have this main event against Keith Lee. It just feels kind of like, you know, a step backwards from like the company's current direction.
Yeah, it's weird. We were talking about last month, like, oh, are they cycling
him out? And even then, I was like, oh, and they found a great spot for him. Like, this tag team, like, I'm into this tag team. I thought he looked great this weekend. So it was like, okay, I guess they're going back to, like, Tracy Williams and Keith Lee and, like, a rematch from, like, the abysmal, like, Atlanta show where they were just, like, brawling and the match stopped.
They had a really good match in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying it'd be bad even, but it's just like, I don't care about it.
Right. And it also just seems weird that it's like, he's like, you know, Tracy Williams and AR Fox are like the next guys up, but Keith Lee beat him, or sorry, Jaka beat him on Saturday. So you're like, I don't know. So on one hand, you're like, I don't know. It's like after last month's show, it seems like there were clear directions. And after this show, it feels like they've opened up a lot of paths for themselves, right? Like you have Keith Lee with the WWN championship and he could defend against, you know, Hot Sauce, AR Fox, and Jaka. And you have Zack Sabre Jr. with the Evolve title and he's being chased by, you know, Austin Theory and Darby Allin's coming for him still. And then, you know,
Walter
beat him. That's three. Each of them have like three challengers kind of coming out of this weekend.
But and all of those are objectively much more interesting than the WWE.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Evolve Championship is the true world championship.
Yeah, duh.
No disrespect to Keith Lee, who was really good in that Chris Dickinson match. I think sometimes we like undersell him, but he's such a presence. And
I really liked him in the Jaka match. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I get tired of this story with Keith Lee that like, oh, now he's serious.
Right. The story. And that's the thing. It's like, it feels like Keith Lee and Matt Riddle are like duplicative characters in the sense that like both of their characters are like, we're like cool, chill dudes who are like very charismatic and have great matches. And we're like that until we get angry. And then we get angry for a little while. We conquer the challenge and then we're like not angry anymore. Like, even that last man standing match that they had where they kind of had that feud never really developed into, like, a true blood feud that would have been really interesting. So, I don't know. I feel like Riddle got there in the Tracy Williams match, and that was, like, and his Chuck Taylor match. So, it's like, when he gets to that place, I think he's more compelling. But, like, I think both of those guys are, like, you feel like you're kind of on a carousel with them where it's, like, oh, we're chill. Oh, they get someone kind of pokes them in the eye and now they're angry and then they're back to being, it feels like almost like kind of like Hogan-esque or like sort of like a WWE character where it's like they have the foes who get them mad and then they vanquish them and then they're like kind of back to where they started. I mean, Keith Lee's wrestling style has changed a little bit in that he's doing fewer flips and he's like a little more, so using his size more, but you still never like in that match at LaBoom, you know, they started chanting friendly fellow at him and he was like, not tonight, not anymore. But then like later in the match, he was like, this is Mewtwo's house. And you're like, all right, like, no, you're that guy. That's fine. But you just feel like with these guys, you're kind of like waiting for some kind of, you have two guys who are two of the three big stars in the company. And it feels like it's just kind of like the same story that they tell with them. And it kind of always ends up in the same place.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's hard to disagree with. I think that's everything from Evolve 98 and Evolve 99. Do you have anything else you want to add, AT?
No, we really talked.
Yeah, we talked a lot.
So I hope this is a good episode because it's long as shit.
Yeah. So, well, we'll be back next month, February 17th and 18th. Will be Evolve 100 and Evolve 101. It's going to be a lot harder to say those names now that we've gotten into three digits. They're in LaBoom for 100, right? So
yeah, and then 101 is in Joppa.
Okay. Right. All right. So we'll be back, of course, to talk about those. I'm sure there'll be a lot going on. I would expect we'll start hearing some more Mania Weekend announcements from here leading up to the next show. So make sure that you are following us on Twitter at Evolve Pod, where we'll be talking about those updates as they come in. And make sure that you're subscribing to the show. You can subscribe to us at the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network at voicesofwrestling.com. Or you can just subscribe to Everything Evolves, our feed. You can get us on iTunes or on any podcast app. You can get us on Google Play. So make sure that you're getting Everything Evolves as soon as it's released two times a month. So I think that's it. You have anything else to add, AT?
No.
I had a feeling you had something else you wanted to say, so I apologize.
Is there something else I should? Did I miss anything?
No. I just thought that I got the sense from you that you had one more thing you wanted to say.
No, my scarf is good.
This was a great ending to the show, I think. All right. For Aaron, I'm Aaron. We're the Wrong Boys. We'll see you next time.
Relieve